This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Equity Mates!
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome back to Equity Mates Investing, a podcast that explores what's possible in the world of investing. If you've just joined us for the first time, a huge welcome. My name is Bryce, and today we're looking at our latest tattoo slogan, Companies Die, Indexes Last Forever. We have a community question on ETF overlap, and we have Adam Dawes back with another Pimp My Portfolio. To chat through it, as always, is my equity buddy, Ren. How are you?
I'm very good, Bryce. Excited for this episode.
Yes. Yeah. I'm still laughing about the fact we're going to get tattoos of Companies Die, Indexes Last Forever.
Are we going to get tattoos?
No.
If we sold Equity Mates,
if we list, I'll get Companies Die, Indexes Last Forever tattooed.
Which is ironic because that's not what you want to be telling your investors once you list.
True.
But speaking of listing, I wanted to just quickly jump in at the top of the show to get your thoughts on this news item that the Financial Times has been reporting.
Okay.
The New York Stock Exchange have been polling market participants on a big change they're considering making.
Oh, I think I've seen this.
Oh, okay.
24/7 trading.
24/7 trading.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Awful idea.
Awful.
Yeah, awful idea.
Good for the exchange. They'll make a heap more money.
Great for the exchange. But can you just imagine the change in mental stress that it'll cause a lot of people? B, just the general working environment in industry. You'll have people literally working around the clock.
Yeah.
The banks, the high frequency traders, you already have people working around the clock trying to play the market in Australia and then play the market overseas.
Yeah, Japan's opening soon.
It would be awful. Just keep it as is. There's no need.
I reckon less. One day a week.
Sure.
Seriously. Market can digest the news, and then every Wednesday, open the market. Everyone can buy
or
sell.
Price
discovery, and then everyone has to own their shares for at least a week.
You can still, yeah. I think it's an awful idea. I don't think it'll get up. I don't know why I say that, but
I mean, look,
it'll be such an industry change. The bankers won't be able to go on their long lunches when market closes.
I mean, imagine being even like working for a company, like being a company CEO. And every morning having to wake up and see what your stock price has done overnight and then respond to it.
Yeah.
Worst start to the day.
Worst start. Well, I mean, it happens with aftermarket trading for some.
And futures and all that stuff.
But just awful idea. And I think it's being driven by the fact that crypto markets are open 24/7.
Crypto, treasuries, futures, and also apparently Stevie Cohen, who's a big investor, has some startup trying to drive it. So
property markets open 24/7 as well.
No one
talks about that.
Maybe that should be the exchange. You can open the stock market 24/7, but there has to be massive settlement costs for each trade.
Yeah, and no prices.
have to knock on the door.
You have to have real estate agents taking you around. Yeah. All right. Anyway, that's a piece of news. We hate it. And if the New York Stock Exchange listens to us, don't do it. If the ASX listens to us, don't even think about doing it.
They are so far from that.
But there's a lot of money that would be made if they do it. So much. Wouldn't surprise me if they do it. But look, Bryce, we wanted to also use the start of the show to talk about this slogan that we included in our latest book, Don't Stress, Just Invest. But that's not the slogan. The slogan is companies die, indexes are forever.
Yeah, I think I said indexes last forever, but it's essentially the same thing. So what do we mean by this, Ren, and why do we have it at the top of the show? I think it's important that we remind ourselves of the value of long-term investing, but also importantly, a lot of new people have come to the show this year and are tossing up around, should I be buying individual companies? Should I be buying indexes? And this is just a great reminder, companies die, indexes are forever. And what do we mean by this? When you're investing in individual companies, you can lose everything.
Companies die.
Jeffrey West, in his book Scale, calculated that since 1950, 28,853 companies have traded on the US stock market, and that 22,469 of those companies had gone bankrupt by 2009. That is 78% of companies that have listed on the stock market have gone bankrupt.
Not great odds.
Not great odds at all.
Why would we be investing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That scares me. Of someone coming to the market, I read that 78%. How am I supposed to get this right?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that despite 78% of those companies that listed on the US stock market between 1950 and 2009 going bankrupt, in that time, this US stock market has grown 23,249%.
Mm.
Or put another way, each $100 invested with dividends reinvested has turned into more than $200,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So then how do you square that? The idea that 75% of companies have gone bankrupt,
yep,
but you've turned $100 into 200 grand in that time. And that is the power of indexes.
That is the power of the index. The top whatever percent remaining 20%. Driving huge market returns.
Well, it's not even as simple.
And rotating through.
Yeah, it's not even as simple as that. It's like a lot of the companies that have gone bankrupt have driven the index for some time. And as they drove the index, they became bigger parts of the index because the stock market index, the ASX 200 or the S&P 500, whatever it is, gets rebalanced every quarter. And as companies grow, they take up a bigger part of the index. And when companies have grown, generally they keep growing. And so then that bigger part of the index then grows more. You benefit from that growth. And then when they start to decline, they get smaller and smaller every quarter. It's like, it's a pretty elegant product.
It's beautiful.
And obviously, like, you miss some of the growth because they grow in the quarter, they're not rebalancing all the time. But you get, I mean, you certainly get enough growth based on
incredible amounts.
And, you know, these companies that grow will grow for years and you'll benefit from that, you know, as we have from the tech giants of today. But those tech giants are going to fall off, they're going to be disrupted and they're going to be replaced. And as that happens, the new companies that come through and overtake them will become bigger parts of the indexes as they become smaller parts of the indexes. And those companies may die, but the index will keep grinding upwards.
I can't wait for the day that Google, Microsoft, Amazon are not the top companies in the S&P 500 because it'll mean, I just can't wait to see what the top companies are, you know what I mean?
There will be a big period of stagnation there though. That's what you've got to know, because they're so much bigger now.
Yeah.
For the other companies to catch up, there'll be a few years of...
So there's no better example than what Ren has just explained by looking at IBM, General Electric, GE and Apple. So IBM was the biggest American company in 1980, GE was then the biggest American company in 2000, and Apple was the biggest American company in 2020. So over a period of about 40 years, we've seen three companies rotate through, driving the index, as Ren was saying, but, you know, at periods then falling away.
Yeah, and if you had tried to stock pick and invested in those big companies, you would have lost money. Like, I think from GE was number one in 2000 to now it's down about 80%.
Yeah.
But in that time, the index has just kept getting stronger and stronger. The biggest company has fallen away, but that hasn't slowed the index down because other companies have come through and taken it over. Mm. Same way in the 80s. Like the saying in the 80s, no one gets fired buying IBM. The IBM went back to back in the Nobel Prizes. They won like Nobel Prize for Physics 2 years in a row. Like they couldn't be touched. They were incredible. If you were an individual stock picker in the 1980s, you had IBM in your portfolio.
Yeah.
But just as it happens time and time again, individual companies die. Even the biggest of powerhouses, the most financially stable and cutting edge technology, they die. That's just the nature of it. Mm. And IBM fell away, not as dramatically as GE, but by 2000, it was number 11 in the index. By 2020, it was number 53 in the index. Mm. But the index powered on, driven by new companies, Apple being the biggest symbol of that. And that, I think, is just an important reminder when you're building your portfolio, when you're thinking about core exposure.
Core, yeah.
Like, that is why indexes are so powerful. That's why they are so hard for active managers to beat and for retail investors like us to beat.
Mm.
It's just a reminder that companies die, indexes are forever. Build your portfolio accordingly. Indexes you can put in a bottom drawer. Companies you've got to keep checking on.
Absolutely. And here's to IPOing so we can get the tat. Companies die, indexes are forever.
Let's ask the community.
Hey, Equity Mate. I just had a question. Hey, Bryce. I've got a question. Your question answered.
So this week we have a question from Eric Alvarez. He says, hey guys, quick question. I have DHHF in my portfolio, which is the BetaShares Diversified All Growth ETF. Is it too much of an overlap if I also buy A200, which is the BetaShares ASX 200? Are there benefits to owning both? So we thought this was a good opportunity to address ETF overlap and understand if it is a good or bad thing in your portfolio, because guaranteed most of us will have some form of it if you're at least doing ETF investing. So let's unpack ETF overlap first. Very simply, ETF overlap is when you have different ETFs in your portfolio that have the same underlying securities or stock positions. Multiple ETFs can track similar indexes, sectors, asset classes. So in Eric's example, he's looking at two ETFs that will have similar exposures. DHHF will have exposures to the Aussie market, so it'll have CommBank, BHP, you name it. The A200 ETF is Australia only, but will also have CommBank, BHP, and some Australia positions. So the question is owning both with that overlap, is there any benefit to that?
Yes.
So I think to start with, in some instances, you can't avoid it. And I don't think it is a bad thing. You just need to be aware of why you're doing it if you do have ETF overlap.
Yeah.
That's my takeaway. I have some level of overlap in my portfolio. You even look at S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. They're going to have ETF overlap.
Do you own both?
I don't, no. Sorry, I do. I have FANG and then I've got the...
That's a good example of overlap.
Yeah.
So you have an S&P 500 ETF,
yeah,
and then which the biggest holdings in that are the big tech stocks. Like, so I'm trying to think, it's like something like 40% of that ETF is now the big tech stocks.
Yeah,
maybe not that much, maybe 30% or something. And then you've got FANG, which is the big tech stocks again.
10 high concentration.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Of big tech.
So that is that is a clear case of overlap.
So talk us through your thinking there.
So the S&P 500 is geared. So that's why I've gone with them. And like I want that. And then I just did want very concentrated exposure, which inevitably you get through the S&P 500 because it makes up something like, 40 or 50% of...
No, I think it's like 30, but yeah.
30.
Yeah.
But there are companies in FANG that... that I wanted direct exposure to, and essentially I wanted to double down on those 10 companies.
Yeah.
I didn't want to worry about the remaining 450. I just wanted to go hard on those 10.
Yeah. So I think that's the thing. If you have an investment thesis that I guess means the overlap would be a good thing, great.
Yeah.
So you know, in the case, let's actually use the examples of these two ETFs. So DHHF is a global diversified ETF. It has stocks, it has thousands of stocks from all around the world. The Aussie proportion of it is about 35% of the ETF.
Yeah.
So that's 35% of DHHF is Aussie stocks. And then obviously 100% of the Australian ETF is Aussie stocks. So if you were going to, if you had $100 to invest, and if you put it in DHHF, then $35 of it would go into the ASX 200.
Yeah.
If you then said, actually, I want to split that $100 across two ETFs, so $50 in ASX 200, $50 in DHHF, then $17.50 of that $50 would go into the Aussie market, and then the whole $50 would go as well. So $67.50 of your money would go into the Aussie market.
Mm.
So that's all to say there's no right or wrong answer here. It's how you want to construct your portfolio. But you've got to be mindful that if you do split your money equally and go into the ASX, you're pretty heavily weighted to the ASX, given that the ASX is 2% of the global stock market.
And I think that's where a lot of people get caught up with this. It's because they think by putting their money across more ETFs, you're getting more diversification. Mm. If you actually look at those numbers there, if $67.50 total is going into the A200 via two ETFs, that's almost 70% of your money now exposed to the ASX 200.
Yeah, you're less diversified.
Yeah, exactly. You're less diversified than if you just put $100 all into DHHF, which again is the beauty of some of these ETFs that are constructed. So the portfolio weighting is varied globally. So yeah.
Now, look, I don't know, Eric, but if I look at this problem and think about how I would do it, I wouldn't add A200.
No. I think you're getting a nice mix of Australian, you're getting total stock market, you're getting developed and emerging market all through the DHHF. So it's essentially everything.
You're paying one set of brokerage.
Yeah.
It's just like less complex. You can build a bigger position in one stock. It's already overweight Australia.
Yeah.
Like 35% of it being Aussie is quite high given Australia's 2% of the global stock market.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I think that's overlap. And in this instance, we wouldn't do it. But I think there's so many examples where overlap makes sense, especially where you've got maybe like an S&P 500. It's 500 stocks. I wouldn't be scared about buying individual stocks that are sort of in the middle of the index. You know, like stock number 100 in the S&P 500 isn't going to really materially move the index. So if you want to have exposure to that particular stock because you think it's going to do well, you kind of have to lean into the overlap and buy it yourself. So there's plenty of examples where overlap makes sense. The challenge is just understanding it and being aware of it. And then,
So I think if you want to do a bit of DD on your own portfolio or help you through making the decision like Eric between two different ETFs, should you go both, just stick with one. There's a good online tool called etftracker.com.au and there's a holding section on there where they have almost all ASX listed ETFs, and you can see the weightings of all of the holdings within that ETF, and it'll actually show you the overlap. So definitely worth checking out.
Nice one. Well, if you want to ask a question, you can go to equitymates.com/contact. You can also record a voice note. We love getting your voice notes and playing them on the show. But after the break, we're going to be joined by Adam Dawes for another edition of Pimp My Portfolio.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
All right, Ren, it is time for
Pimp My Portfolio. Pimp My Portfolio.
That's it. Pimp My Portfolio, where we bring in an expert and a community member and get their portfolio pimped. And we have with us today Adam Dawes. Adam, welcome.
Well, great to be here, guys. Thanks so much.
And on the other side, we have community member James. James, welcome.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thank you for submitting your portfolio today. Cannot wait to get into this one. So, Ren, take us through it. What is James's portfolio?
Yeah, so James's portfolio, I guess, is anchored by the Vanguard Australian Shares High Yield ETF. About 38% of his portfolio is in that. Then there's a few other thematic ETFs. We've got the BetaShares Asia Tech ETF, GlobalX Uranium, and VanEck Video Gaming and Esports. And then after that, we've got five individual stocks, Archer Materials, Lewin Materials, MinRes, Mineral Resources, Panoramic Resources, and Vital Metals. So a bit of a tilt towards the resources sector in the individual stocks. But Dawsey, over to you. How are you thinking about this?
Well, I'm calling this the tech resource portfolio.
Nice.
And look, it does look like there's been a little bit of thought being put into it. But James, what's the sort of outline for your investments in these stocks?
There's a bit of thought, but it's a bit of a mess.
That's why you're here.
Yeah, that's
why.
Firstly, thank you to Bryce and Ren for starting me on the journey. But also don't take my pathway as a reflection on the education that you guys provide.
Good, good. I'm glad you put that disclaimer in.
Yeah. I suppose I started my investing journey sometime around 2020 when I was trying to buy a house. COVID hit. And I thought, great, house prices will go down, but they didn't. And so I shelved that idea and started diving into individual stock investing because there were some companies out there that looked undervalued. So that went well. This portfolio looked completely different at that point in time. And I probably got overconfident and started investing in small cap miners and other odd investments. Eventually bought a house, sold out of a bunch of other shares, and I'm left holding on to some assets that didn't perform that I'm holding out hope on.
Yeah, that makes sense. You can see that by some of the stocks in there that you've sort of held on. I mean, that Archer Materials was a fantastic stock back in the day. You're sort of still hanging on to the loss on that one?
Yeah, that one. Vital Metals is another one that was going really well from when I first invested. And reached some peaks and I didn't sell at the time, and now I'm sort of holding on still. Yes. Feeling as though there's value in the companies, but don't know how long it'll take to ever recognise it.
So having a trading plan or having an investment plan is really, really important when you're looking at these things. And certainly when you've got some downside protection. So if something is going to fall, whether it's a 10%, 20% stop loss or 50% stop loss, you've got to have some rules that go around that. From there also, on the upside, you should potentially also take profits, 10%, 50%, 100%, when you do have those. And a lot of time with the smaller portfolios, what I do for clients is that if we've made 100%, so in other words, the stock goes from $5 to $10, you take out your original investment, okay? You let the profit run. So if that profit goes to 20 bucks, you've doubled, tripled your money, fantastic. But if it goes to zero, you haven't actually lost anything because you've taken out your original investment. You take out that original investment, put it into something else and let that grow again as well. And this is where you can build out a portfolio going forward. But I do like some of the international side of things. You've got the BetaShares tech giants. You've got the VanEck video gaming, the esports one. Now that's like, I mean, we all know that esports, especially after COVID, esports, the betting on esports was fantastic, and it gets more than an NFL game gets to people watching, Fortnite or some of these other games. So I think that's a really good thematic ETF that you've got there. I do like mineral resources because it's got the new and the old. It's got the iron ore, plus it's got the lithium side of things. So I think you're doing well there. To bring this out, I think what you need to do is have a little bit of a structure around the portfolio, and really, you've got your core versus satellite. You've got your Vanguard Australian shares. I think that's great. So that could be potentially your core, but I would build that out more. I would have bigger stocks, maybe looking in the top 200 and looking to sort of build that out. We don't have any financials in here. We don't have any property stocks in here. We don't have any sort of income generating. But most of the stocks, what I would do for you is that you would look for dividend reinvestment as well. So in other words, if they do pay a dividend, you would get that reinvested back into the company for your portfolio to continue to grow. And I think that's the key, is trying to get this portfolio up again after you've sold down probably all the good stocks and you've sort of kept some of those ones that are nursing some losses.
So, Dorsey, could that be achieved, though, through the VHY, the Australian Shares High Yield? Because a lot of those top 200 companies are paying great dividends.
Yes.
James could just build a bigger position, because that's what I'm hearing you're saying.
Yeah.
You've got these thematic ETFs and a few species, but you're wanting to see more of that core position.
Absolutely. The core position is going to make money day in, day out, rain, hail or shine. It's going to be there. And then we can muck around with some of the speculatives around the outside. That's the fun part. But the boring part is that it's going to continue to grow and generate revenue as well as income. But then you're diversified by the Australian Shares High Yield side of things. Yeah. That's the diversification that you need.
Yeah.
And then from there, we can have some speculatives. But I want to see that core portfolio to become a lot larger, because that's where you're going to make the money over 5, 10, 20 years. Mm. That's where you're going to get the benefit from it. And then the speculative stuff, some will go to zero, some will go to 1,000 times higher. But at least we've got that core sitting there.
So, James, I've got a question for you. First of all, congratulations on buying the house. Like, it's no mean feat, so well done.
Thank you.
When you freed up your money to put the deposit down, why did you sell all the stuff you'd made money on rather than sold the stuff that had fallen off?
Yeah, I'm not sure my psychology in that was right, but I think I'm hanging on to the value that was in those shares and expecting that at some point in time they'll come back. Without delving into some of the individual reasons around each of those shares as to why they've gone down, I felt like it wasn't impossible for them to recover.
So, Dorsey, yeah, I'm sure you've come across clients that have a similar mindset.
Absolutely, yeah.
How do you counsel them?
Yeah, so I think what you've got, and in the portfolio, let's talk about Archer Minerals or Materials. Like, that used to be a graphite business, okay? And then they've changed into being sort of quantum computing. Now, that has a great ring to it and it has a great story to it, but really, does that mean that it should be invested? A lot of the time we look at portfolios and you want to, and I'll use a garden analogy, you want to get rid of the weeds but let the flowers grow, right? So the weeds are the ones that aren't doing so well, and you should really be getting out of those, putting that money into something that's going to continue to do better, and then let the flowers grow. So I think a lot of these kind of portfolios is that it's very tough to take a loss. It's tough because you get emotionally attached. But what you should be doing is looking from a clean lens. This hasn't worked. And some people say, well, it's only worth $1,000, so I may as well just let it sit there, right? But that $1,000 can be used somewhere else to then grow to $2,000, to $3,000. And so while that other stock is just sitting there doing nothing, it's time of value of money, and that's where you should be looking, is to get that portfolio, get rid of the weeds and get it to grow a lot higher. Mm.
It's opportunity cost.
Correct.
That's what it is.
Correct.
Like, with limited funds, you own a house, we don't have the ability to just keep pouring money in. So it's like you need to be optimizing the capital that you've got.
Very cool.
If it's sitting there at a loss where it could be in a NASDAQ 100 pumping out 30% in the last 3 months.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is an opportunity cost.
Yeah.
James, that brings us to the end. Do you have any final questions for Adam? Otherwise, thank you so much.
No, I think you've answered all my questions. I've probably got to bite the bullet and stop being so emotional.
That's a good call.
It's a challenge we all face, yes. And I don't think it ever gets any easier. So, hopefully this helped, and good luck with it all.
No, it's been great. Thank you, Bryce. Thank you, Ren, and thank you, Adam.
This is Pimp My Portfolio. Pimp My Portfolio.
If you'd like to submit your portfolio to Pimp My Portfolio, head to equitymates.com/contact. Similarly, if you would like to sit down with Adam, we can connect you. So head to equitymates.com/advice and we'll connect you with Adam. But Adam, as always, thank you so much.
Yeah, great to be here.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540-697.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.